The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
This is Susanna Cruz, and I am from Chicago, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, Mike and Michelle. This is Rick P. from Crystal Lake, Illinois, and just want to say that I just love the Mickey Miles Podcast. Keep doing what you're doing.
I'm Teresa Kometz from Portland, Michigan, and I listen to Mickey Miles as I train.
Hi, I'm Joe Laszlo from Atlanta, Georgia, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast. Roll Tide.
This is Walter Songer from San Antonio, Texas, and I love and train with the Mickey Miles and More Podcast.
Hi, I'm Brandon Miller, and I'm here from York, Pennsylvania, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 538 of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on the show today is Michelle Scribner-McLean and Chris Eliopoulos, and we are on the third and final installment of our discussion with Brandon Huff. Brandon was very instrumental in doing a lot of work for the Run Disney races that were held on the West Coast. So without further ado, let's get back to the very next question that Michelle had, and that is, well, let's listen.
Have you ever run a Disney race, Brandon?
You know, I have. I'm very lucky that I got the experience to go to the last ever Tower of Terror 10-miler, which I hope Disney will bring back someday. I loved it. I got to do the 5K there. I believe it was called the Happy Haunted 5K. Mm. And, you know, at that point, I was still pretty new to Disney and hadn't, you know, as a more competitive runner, I don't know if I had necessarily bought into the experience that Disney was trying to create for its runners. And I was like, you know, I'm all serious. I'm just here to race. And I'll never forget, it was an overcast morning. It was kind of drizzling. And standing at the start line, the Headless Horseman came out from across the field on a horse and charged over to us and got up on its rear legs. And I was like, okay, you got me, Disney. It's cool. So that's when I drank the Kool-Aid and realized Disney was creating an incredible experience. And they made me promise I wouldn't win the race. That was the promise. A Run Disney staffer could not win, and so I led the race for a few miles and then dropped back to fourth.
You let me win. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. I was gonna share it. But I'm hoping, I'm thinking maybe perhaps in 2019, I think I want to do, the Goofy? Races down on the East Coast. I think that would be an incredible time. So
all of them would be the Dopey. The Goofy is just the half of the ball.
Dopey, there we go. Yeah, definitely. I'm thinking about the Dopey, whichever one gives me maximum punishment.
Yeah, that's the one. That's what we're doing this year. So,
yeah.
Oh, man, it'll be a great time. You'll have fun.
So, yeah, actually, I have a follow up to that, which is, you know, what considerations do you have for Disney runners versus other races? And this is a whole, as you rightly said, it's a whole different experience. So, what are the types of things that you look at for these types of races versus other races that you plan?
I definitely think the biggest thing, and I'm not going to say it's myself specifically with this question, but as a team, as an organization, Run Disney's participants, one, there's no other race and organization that brings first-time runners to the table like Run Disney.
Right.
Run Disney is probably an industry leader and world leader in creating new runners. And with that in mind, one of the big things that we always have to keep in mind is these are runners without a lot of runners relative to the field without experience. They've never, you know, shown up to a major race that starts early. They've never perhaps even run a half marathon, run an official race. And so with that, you're always thinking, you know, we have to guide these runners, and that's definitely not a bad thing. It just changes the dynamic. Per se, other races we did, Spectrum did, was like the Catalina Island Marathon or the Avalon 50 miler. I would expect most people who show up to Avalon to run 50 miles across Catalina are, you know, pretty self-sufficient runners, and they know exactly what they're doing and how to do it. So with that, you know, just creating an experience, a guest flow through the expo, creating resources that give runners knowledge so they feel like they have their questions answered and they can find answers to their questions through multiple platforms, and just being readily available to help people and designing courses and creating an experience that's just the most positive it can be to create not only a new runner, but a return runner.
That's cool.
Hey, Brandon, could you could you take us through the certification process? What has to be done? Principles or what type of policies need to be followed? What are the rules? What are the objectives? What are the things you have to watch out for? And I'm just curious as to how that certification process works.
That's a really great question. I recently also on Reddit did an explanation of that on a different forum. It's a more involved process than a lot of people realize. You know, a lot of people finish the race and they go, well, my Garmin said the course was 13.2 miles, or my Garmin.
We've never said that, Bruce.
Yeah, my Strava app on my phone said your course was short. And it's funny, I always kind of laugh, but I understand it because people are unfamiliar. Perhaps they think I get in a car and drive and go, well, the speedometer or the odometer said. But really what's happening is the certification process, and this is the universal way to do it. So I don't know. I say universal. Hopefully other planets are doing it that way. But here on Earth, all around the globe, we use what's called a Jones counter. It's a little counter you put on your front wheel, and you can put it on any type of bike. And all you need is a 1,000-foot calibration course. You usually certify that with steel tape, so you know it's exactly 1,000 feet. And I would go bike up and down that little 1,000-foot path 4 times, and I would take the average. And I go, okay, say that 1,000-foot course took me 1,000 clicks. And I was like, that would be great in an ideal world, because then I know I can multiply it by 5.28 and it takes 5,280 clicks to get a mile. And then just to be safe, so that we never short a course, we multiply by a safety factor of 1.001. And now I know my clicks per mile. And so then I'd go down to Disney, having already figured out a course that I had estimated to be within a couple hundredths of 13.1 or 6.2 or 3.1, and would start the ride. And the key thing is always to follow the shortest possible route. So say, for example, Disneyland, you start there on Disneyland Drive and you headed north towards Ball. And then the road always has that big S bend. When I certified the course, I would hug the curb on the right side, and then I would take a tangent all the way to the left side and then back to the right side, creating that shortest possible route. So if you wanted to run a 13.1-mile half marathon and you followed every tangent, you would likely get the exact route I took. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes difficult to certify. We would do it very early in the morning. Typically, we'd start around 2 a.m., we wanted to do it when the park was empty, so we'd have a lot of time in case anything came up. And then simultaneously, we'd have to get on the city streets. And you can't take a tangent across 4 lanes of traffic during rush hour. So we would usually get a police escort. We'd be out there 5, 6 a.m., hopefully wrapping up around that time. But the police would sit behind us and help guide us across traffic so that I could always take that shortest possible route. And then after I got done, if the course luckily was right where we needed it, that was great. If it was a little too short or long, we'd make some changes, and I'd go redo those portions of the route, and then I'd recalibrate to make sure my tire pressure hadn't changed too much and my numbers were still good. And then I'd fill out about 5 to 10 pages of paperwork and submit it, and hopefully it would get approved, and unless they identified any error in my math, at which point I would correct and send it back.
So interesting. That's cool. I have a question. I've always wondered, I've gotten to the races and all of a sudden there's, you know, everybody's looking at their weather app, and all of a sudden it's going to be really, really warm or really, really cold or whatever. I'm always wondering what is happening backstage or behind the scenes when, for instance, it's going to be a really warm day? Do you just say, oh my gosh, I just can imagine how freaked out you must get in that situation.
I'd like to say it'd be funny to say, oh, we're pulling our hair out backstage, but like I've said a couple times, I can't reiterate how professional and on top of it the Disney team is, and the rest of my coworkers at Spectrum and pretty much all the partners. So again, Disney industry leader when it comes to contingencies. It'd be hard to think of a scenario where Disney would be caught off guard. I really can't think of one. And so, like, for say Disneyland Half in September, we were always just ready for heat. In fact, you were hoping for cool weather because that would be ideal for everybody, but we were just ready for heat. And then for like the cold races, we were ready for cold. Like if the race was in November, like Superheroes or Star Wars in January, we always had Mylar blankets at the finish. And if it turned out to be too warm for them, that's fine. But if it was a cold day, we were ready to hand out Mylar. Tougher contingencies to plan for are, you know, the lightnings, which thankfully you don't get a lot out on the West Coast, severe winds, like we saw the first year in Superheroes. Those are the tougher contingencies, but over the years, the Disney team is always going to running conferences, working with partners across the industry to stay on top and have multiple contingencies. And I know every race, for example, we'd meet the day before the first race at the command center. And just to make sure everyone was on the same page, they would throw a contingency up on the board. They'd be like, hey, it's 5 a.m. We're having a huge issue here. How would we handle this as a team? And they wanted everybody's input. They wanted the PD to input. They wanted me to input. They wanted medical to input. And constantly making sure we all knew our roles and having all those, you know, checks and balances just in case something went wrong, it didn't matter what it was, that we'd all be ready to handle and work our way through the chain. So like I said, I don't think you could find a way to catch Disney too off guard, especially at this point after all these years. I can't think of a better team or race you'd want to be at when something goes wrong.
That's really cool.
So I'm going to ask one last question before we start talking about your new position. And that is, so you also were you involved in the providing the food at the end of the race, the beverages and food at the end of the race?
No, that was so the Fitfuls, that's ordered through Disney. Okay. Disney takes care of that. I did have a coworker who oversaw the whole post-race area, the family reunion area, the FRA as we called it. She oversaw like the flow and making sure everything got put in place, but we didn't necessarily do the food. That was through Disney, who handled that internally. And all I know specifically about Fitful is a pretty unique company. They've grown a lot over recent years. They pretty much have a big catalog. And you just approach Fitful and you go, you know, we want almond rocas, applesauce, whatever. You just check whatever you want. And they just like ring it up and build you a box and send it to you. Right. So pretty interesting. I enjoyed seeing those pop up at more races.
Well, Mike's got a big bugaboo where he wants chocolate milk at the end of every race. So how would we as guests approach Disney and ask for that?
You know, what I would recommend is recently, if you've been out on the West Coast recently, we've had, I believe, Nesquik out there, which has been great because when I'm thirsty after leading the first runner through, you know, heaven forbid they just ran 70 minutes, but I had to bike 13 miles and that was tough too. So I swing by the Nesquik and grab a chocolate protein or a vanilla protein shake and go back out on the course. So Nesquik has been there. And I think that's been a great addition and a great sponsorship. And so in that vein, you know, on social media or through the info channels of Run Disney, reach out and let them know that you enjoy that aspect. Because like I said, they're watching, they're paying attention. They want to know what you enjoy.
I guess they don't listen to this podcast, though, because he mentions it a lot.
Yeah. So tell us now, Brandon, so as cool as this was, you left Spectrum back in July and you started up your own business called the Advanced Running Project. And I found a lot of this stuff very interesting. You've basically taken a lot of what you knew back in the day at Disney and also in your running career and created a company about it. So can you tell me a little bit more about what it is exactly that you do?
Yeah, no worries. Heartbreaking to leave Run Disney in that role. It was just very fortunate that my fiance had finished her PhD and was offered an incredible job. And so, you know, we had been living apart 3 years, and it was time to come back and be with her. It was a tough 3 years to be apart. And so I was thinking to myself, you know, I had this world-class experience working out on the West Coast, putting on just, I mean, Spectrum puts on, you know, perhaps I'm biased, but the best events on the West Coast. You know, the Catalina races are world-class and have won numerous accolades, the Disney races. So I've got all this incredible experience from the past few years. I grew up competing. I ran at the Air Force Academy. About 6 years ago, I started a running forum on Reddit known as Advanced Running because I felt that there's a niche of runners, you know, and who weren't being catered to. And a lot of people might hear the term advanced running and they might be off put and they think I'm not advanced. Like, and so we were very clear up front, at least on the forum that I started, that advanced is not a pace. It's not a PR. It's not a distance. It's not a weekly mileage. It's a mindset. Advanced runners are those runners who care, and they care about the sport of running. They care about their health, and they want to grow as runners and as individuals. And so, and over time, that forum blossomed to up to like 16,000 users or something. And I was like, wow, there's something here. And so, unrelated from the Reddit forum, it's a separate entity these days. I still oversee it, but it's not correlated with my new project. I started the Advanced Running Project, and it's a grassroots initiative to give existing runners the resources and tools they need to grow as runners. And it's also built and meant to give runners who are on the fence more resources to become greater runners, and then to bring new runners into the sport, like emulating Disney. Like, how can we get more people running? It's been such a powerful, positive force in my life, and I wanted to share that with others. And so we offer, we're going to offer event consulting for other events. We're going to start our first few events here in Dayton, Ohio, where we're based out of, in 2018. I'm hoping to start a series of 5Ks. We offer coaching. We just had our first athlete finish Ironman Florida yesterday, which was incredibly exciting. And we also sell apparel and stuff. So it's great. We just partnered locally with the local New Balance store, who's going to assist us, and some other great partners like Artican, Active Acuity, which is a mindfulness program for endurance athletes based out of Colorado. We've partnered with them. So a lot of exciting stuff right now.
Sounds amazing. So if somebody needed to get in touch with you about this, how would they get in touch with you?
Right now, you can go to advancedrunning.com. It's just a splash page, but through it, you can sign up for email distributions for newsletters. And there's also links to our Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you can also always email me, Brandon, at advancedrunning.com. And like we said, we're hoping to start in December to officially unveil the website. Mostly complete right now, but don't want to turn it on until it's 100% mm-hmm. ready for the users. But I'm always on social media, and I'm always on Reddit too. So I can be reached pretty readily.
Oh, beautiful. Nice. Anything else, you guys?
No, this is fascinating. I don't know if Mike has anything else.
No, I just want to thank Brandon for spending time with us. A lot of interesting things. We knew that Run Disney did a lot of prep work to make their race experiences really worthwhile for the runners, and now we have even more of an insight as to how long it takes and how much work it takes and how many different people have to put their hands in this to make it a very worthwhile and enjoyable day for the runners. So we thank you very much for your time.
Oh, no, thank you so much for having me, and thank you to every runner who has ever come out to a Disney event. It's y'all changed my life and just gave me such a positive experience over the past few years. It was a pleasure to be involved in that project.
Thanks, Brandon.
Thank you, Brandon.
Yeah, thank you again.
So for Brandon, Huff, and for Chris Iliopoulos, and for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/mickeymilespodcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/mickeymilespod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@mickeymilespodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.